Welcome to Disruptive Successor, a show for next generation leaders in family businesses and entrepreneurs who want to disrupt the status quo and take their existing business to a whole new level. We all know that what got us here isn't going to get us there. This show will provide inspiration, advice, and resources to help you create massive impact.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at thegoldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Hi, it's Jonathan Goldhill. Welcome back to another episode of the Disruptive Successor Show. Today, I have a different guest on, someone who is passionate about nonprofits and social enterprises. This is where I started my career. I spent my early years raising money for different causes. And so I'm really pleased to have Christian LaFaire on my show today. He speaks and writes on nonprofits and social enterprise based on his track record of starting nearly 3,000 nonprofit 501c3 organizations, in addition to 30 plus years of copywriting and fundraising for myriad causes. So, Christian, you are welcome to the show today.
Thank you so much, Jonathan. I appreciate it, and I'm excited to talk about these things today.
Yeah, so I think this is something that's really interesting, because you're the first guest that I've had that is really talking to successful family businesses and entrepreneurs as well, who want to leave a legacy and who want to do it in the form of maybe paying something forward. And you help them start with a company that you created called Instant Nonprofit. Tell us a little bit about what Instant Nonprofit is, and then a little bit about why you got started in this business.
Yeah, Instant Nonprofit helps founders go from idea to IRS approved 501c3. And we do all of that work for you. So it's about allowing someone who wants to make an impact to focus on their mission and not all of this bureaucratic stuff that they probably will only do once or twice in their life.
That's great. So tell me about your experience in the nonprofit world. How did you get into it? When did you get into it? Why did you get into it, maybe?
Well, when I was 8 years old, I was outside playing with my friends. I grew up in North Jersey, and my mom called me inside after returning from a doctor visit with my little sister, who was about almost four. And she sat me down and looked kind of serious. And of course, I'm just eight, so like, what's up, mom? And she told me that my sister was not speaking yet at 3 and a half, because she probably never would. She was a little bit different than most of the other kids, you know, and I learned later, developmentally disabled, mentally retarded, what they called back in the 70s, that my sister was in fact unique. She is absolutely the best human I know, but she's nonverbal, right? And there's nothing about her appearance that would give this away. But as I grew up, I'd go to Special Olympics and watch her get second place all the time at Special Olympics, because she would stop to high five all her fans in the stands and stuff. And over the years, you know, I didn't know that they were nonprofits then, but I engaged with all these wonderful organizations staffed by these incredible people who sort of helped us in our family journey through that. And then fast forward to 2010, I went to start a nonprofit with a couple of friends for completely unrelated reasons. And I said, why don't you give me the application. You guys go work on the mission stuff and we'll get back together. How hard can it be? And I quickly learned that it is very difficult and very time consuming. And I just got this moral outrage because I remembered my sister. I remembered, Special Olympics. And I said, well, somebody did that one day And they faced these incredible challenges and a year-long delay and a very opaque process. And I just said, this is ridiculous, and I need to do something about it. And here we are, you know, 3,500 charities later.
That's fantastic, I have to say. So let's talk to our listeners about why they would want to consider doing this. I know I have quite a bit of experience with this myself. And I do understand the concept that leaving a legacy, being a, you know, just having your name maybe associated with, a lot of people put their names on buildings or universities. But why would someone who has a successful business want to start a nonprofit?
Well, I call the nonprofit the quantum entity. And without getting too esoteric and woo-woo on quantum mechanics, there's a concept called superposition in quantum mechanics and quantum theory. And it, superposition means that something can occupy two states at the same time. And, you know, humans do that quite a bit. We're just unaware of it. And what a nonprofit allows a business owner to do is sort of superposition their business and their life, their experience, their legacy, all of it, through creating an organization that is very heart-centered. And if you've ever, everybody's had those business deals come out of a meeting where you simply connected with someone on much more of a heart basis than like a business networking event or something. And that's really where business gets started, is you feel good about someone. And what better way to feel good about someone and make a really deep connection than to have a shared cause? So, there are a whole bunch of ways I could elucidate on how that works. But when you create an organization alongside of your for-profit that is purpose-driven, there's the halo effect. You appear to be good. You're doing good in the world. You're seen as a responsible person. It gives you a channel, a way to direct your the benefits that you're trying to bestow when you go to a silent auction or you give to a cause. And so many people I know who are business owners, they kind of get hit up when they go to church, synagogue, you know, the coffee shop, and people say, oh, I'd love to have you to my event. So you can put some structure and process around that with a nonprofit that's aligned with your for-profit and really go into a whole new level and a whole new world of personal connections and even meet people that we would never have the opportunity to outside of your normal business circles.
Well, I wish I had known of you 6 months ago when I was setting up a donor advised fund, because I looked into doing a nonprofit myself and it seemed like you needed to have a whole lot of assets to do it. And it didn't seem like you could make a living and get paid starting a nonprofit. So can you get paid and make a living? And how much do I have to have, or how much does someone have to have to really be successful or moderately successful in this business?
Well, really, those are all sort of it depends questions. And I try not to answer questions like an attorney.
Okay.
It really, you could start out with absolutely no funds, right? You might have one example that business owners often don't realize that they can benefit, but the literature is absolutely compelling. Today, we have a shortage of people who are really committed to doing a great job. You know, we're not sure what this great resignation is or whatever, but it is hard to find good people who do a great job and want to stay, right? And there's a lot of competition for jobs. So if you have great workers and you connect them with a meaningful endeavor outside of work that has a socially beneficial purpose, the literature is overwhelming that they will stay if you connect them with that, something in the community that has a little bit of a continuity to it, a little bit of a something they can look forward to as a small part of what you offer in the world of benefits and the world of a company culture. So, for example, in coding, in software, these coding engineers can jump laterally from job to job with a 15% bump, you know, even more than once a year. And there's a big study and a big case that I read about where they went from an 80% turnover at one point to like a 20 or 15% by engaging these coders in a community oriented project, where they were kind of getting more and more committed every week that they would show up and just give a few hours of their work week as volunteers to the cause. And then of course the employer can write that off. And it really is it's a match made in heaven because everybody wins.
Hmm. So it sounds like you can get paid.
You can get, oh yes, I did. You can absolutely get paid. A lot of people get concerned about conflict of interest. Can I be a director? Can I be a founder and also get paid by the organization? Right. And the way I put that is that you have three hats on a table in front of you. Why would you never wear two hats at the same time? Well, besides the fact that you'd look silly, one hat says staff, one hat has a label called director, and one is the officer hat. And you simply wear those hats at different times. You can absolutely get paid by your nonprofit for any job that you would have to hire off the street to perform, the kind of things that make the wheels go around at any business. And a nonprofit is really just another business. When you take that hat off and you put on the director hat to make the decisions for the organization, you shouldn't be putting in a lot of time and effort as a director, especially initially. And that's volunteer time generally. And the same thing with an officer position. So that's how you can kind of keep those three things straight and understand how you can avoid conflict. And ultimately, the conflict of interest policy that every nonprofit should have and that we provide simply states you will not pay more than market value for any product, service, or employment compensation.
Sounds a lot like a regular corporation, like a closely held corporation. So what if I already have a successful business? Why would I start a nonprofit?
Well, as I said, there are some inherent benefits among maybe getting your employees engaged. There are also ways that you can leverage that to expand the world in which your business lives. And you can't separate the business owner from the business, right? And so once we get to a certain scale and a certain stage, it's like, what else is there in my life? Like, what am I building toward as far as a future and a life of meaning besides rolling out another update or another product? And you know, certainly making money is merit of its own. But with a nonprofit, you could start the nonprofit and certainly come into some circles and make business contacts that would exist outside of your normal book of business right now by attending events. You find something you are passionate about, and then you will go align with other people, and inevitably business arrangements come out of that. You can also use that for your wealth management strategy. People wondering in this great transfer of wealth we're seeing that's coming up, what are they going to do, right? They didn't plan this into their life ahead of time. And so what you can do is you could just start a modest nonprofit. You don't have to have big, crazy dreams. And you can sort of work into that. What is this going to look like? And how am I going to divert resources to that I might have given away anyway, that I might have contributed to the world in a way that really engages me and my family and my friends and my business associates towards something really positive. And again, I get to lead with this whole new, fresh excitement that I did when I started the company to begin with.
I like that. It seems like also there's tax deductibility benefits.
Definitely.
And you basically can do well while maybe also doing good. So that seems and get paid in the process. And leave a bit of a legacy. I'm sorry again that 6 months ago we didn't meet, because I had a dream that I wanted to start some kind of an entrepreneurial education program that would take people to Costa Rica to maybe, I know someone who founded an ashram there, and I thought we could probably double as a workshop retreat space. And I also thought about how addiction has touched family members that I have in my life. And I thought it would be a great place for addicts to go and learn skills. So what are some of the interesting nonprofit organizations that you've been exposed to or you think our listeners might be interested in?
Well, there are two areas that I love about being in this business. One is talking to people about these things. And I feel like I have this special position where I'm being entrusted with some really good energy about what somebody's dreaming about, how they might change the world. I think that's just positive, inherently positive. And then I get to hear about some of these amazing projects. We have started organizations, for example, who staffed by ex-military, going and rescuing women and children from human trafficking.
Wow, that's great.
Using innovative technologies to pull plastic from the ocean raising consciousness by introducing ayahuasca and other things with legit shamans and processes, but right here in the US.
Amazing.
And even like some of the things, a lot, addiction, veterans organizations, animal rescues. There are so many people doing good things already. And they have, they're rescuing dogs and cats, for example, in their neighborhood. And they're sitting here, you know, cutting checks and putting, you know, scrounging money together to get the food and the cages and all of that kind of thing. And then working a list of people in the neighborhood to foster these animals and find homes for them and everything. And they finally go, I can't afford to do this anymore. Or people want to give me money. I get that all the time. I do a lot of, as many sales calls as I can, as many strategy sessions as I can, because I do love to talk to these people. And they call and they say, I just can't afford to put this money out anymore. And this is unsustainable. Very good friend of mine rides around in LA on a highly customized Hayabusa motorcycle as Spider-Man visiting kids with, you know, terminal illness. And they love it. And he's been putting his money out of his pocket for years to do this. And finally said, I met him at a retreat. And he said, I got to start this nonprofit or I'm going to have to give this up. And I was like, well, don't give it up. And we helped him. And now he's able to continue and do fundraisers and people can get that tax write-off, which is a huge incentive. So again, those are just some of the awesome missions that.
Wow. And you do it for a third of typical legal fees and in less than 60 minutes of time. So how much are typical legal fees, if you don't mind sharing, to form a nonprofit?
Not at all. I mean, we have packages from $677 for a small nonprofit, the Little League, the PTA, up to $6,000 plus for people who want much more detailed consulting and a fundraising plan developed, et cetera. But it's not about how much the package costs. It's really about fitting this to the needs of the organization, the needs of the founder. And so what we do is, you've seen the government forms. They ask you for your name 27 times. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you don't quite understand the question they're asking. And so we've boiled all this down, translated all that IRS speak into English. The very smallest nonprofits only spend about 20 minutes completing our forms and answering questions because we're able to elicit that information very efficiently. And then it is a completely done for you process. For the larger organizations that have a bigger budget and are doing more ambitious projects, maybe it's a couple of hours. But either way, the IRS rates it at about 20 to 30 hours worth of work. And we reduce that by a factor of like 10x.
That's amazing. And so I understand that you have a lot of expertise in this area. Do you provide training for 501c3 executives? Do you help them all along the way after you get the organization formed?
We do have some operationalizing training, and a lot of nonprofits, of course, it's like the standard, you know, pyramid of distribution of business in America. There are some big, you know, big companies at the very top, and then the broadest base is the smallest nonprofits. And so we work with all levels of those, and we train on fundraising primarily. That's something I'm really passionate about. I used to fly around the country and meet with complete strangers who I never quite got over being amazed at how complete strangers would be so generous as to write me a check and entrust me with $10,000, $100,000 even to go do good for the cause that they believed in, because they had so much abundance because of this great country and our free market system. And so that was something I really enjoyed. And it allowed me to get exposed to mindsets that really underpin fundraising. They're very similar to sales, but it's really not sales, because what we're doing is we're inviting someone to a bigger life. They've got money. What they don't have is a deep connection to the cause that they care about. And that is exactly what we train people to provide.
It's really fascinating. I started my career as a 21-year-old in San Francisco, going to the Foundation Library and doing research on foundations that would fund some different nonprofits that I was involved in. And I kicked around with a number of different nonprofits in those days. Boy, that was painful work. And I imagine that those libraries have been all but outdated and sort of put aside by GuideStar, which is available online. And now you're offering something that's almost sort of a revolutionary concept, which is like, don't be so librarian in your approach, but kind of use your marketing and your promotion and your connections to draw people in. They don't have to be foundations that you're raising money from. They could just be individuals. Is that right?
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, without getting into a whole class on fundraising, you're talking about concentric circles. So the nearest circle to you is your friends and family. Mm-hmm. And people like really get worried about asking your friends and family because they're like, okay, what are you doing now? But that is the most important place to start, is people who you already have that relationship with. It's also the fastest path to cash, right? They're going to give because it's you, whether they like your kitty rescue. And then moving out from there, it's friends of friends. It's your extended network. And then outside of that is organizations and people that you don't have any relationship with at all, but have an affinity for that cause that you do. So as relationship, it's kind of a continuum where relationship decreases in importance and the cause increases. And that's where you get straight up grant writing. They have an RFP, they put out a grant request, and then they look for the most appropriate organizations who need that money. And there are billions of dollars there, but there are also billions of dollars in private coffers of individuals and small corporations that is so much easier and faster to raise than big grants that have a timeline and they have disbursement schedules and also a lot of very stringent execution and reporting requirements that private donors simply don't ask for.
Yeah, well, you know, after I did some of the fundraising, and not all that successfully as a 21-year-old, for these small, scrappy nonprofit organizations, I went to business school. And when I graduated, I joined an economic development center that I stayed at for 10 years. Wow. And during those 10 years, we wrote all sorts of grants, which were, you know, basically the opportunity was an RFP was put out there. And we sometimes were the sole bidder. The largest grant that we got was $1 million. And then after the Northridge earthquake, we developed a program that got pushed through the Department of Commerce, Office of Management and Budget. And it took 6 months, maybe a year, for that whole thing to happen. And we brought $7 million to our agency. But I have to say, in the early days of forming these nonprofits, it seems like we'd take 6 months to get a designation, take forever to do research, submit grant proposals. You know, then when I got into the RFPs with the city, state, federal government, the federal government took a long time. The city and state, 3 months, sometimes longer in that whole process. But you're like short-circuiting a lot of this stuff, I imagine. I imagine the process of getting a nonprofit formed today is much faster. So, you know, tell us, what can someone expect in terms of getting a nonprofit, or maybe the wheels of government maybe still move slowly, so it might take a while to get it formed. But with your thoughts around how these concentric circles work and getting money in the door, that could happen a lot faster if you're a connected person.
It's true. The formation process, what many people don't know about the formation process is that the IRS's official policy is to backdate tax exempt status to the date of incorporation. Now, try spitting that out as a new nonprofit founder, and you're probably going to stumble over your words. And obviously, you have an interest in the person you're talking to giving you money before you've got your IRS letter, because that can take a while. So we provide something called the Memo on Retroactive Deductibility, which quotes the IRS's policy, and that serves in lieu of the IRS letter until you get it. And so as soon as somebody signs up with us, start a nonprofit, we're the only company that I know of that does this. We provide them with a trove of value add documents, training on how to run a board meeting in 30 minutes or less with a matching 9-step agenda and lots of other things that help them. But they love that memo because it takes them from stumbling over a conversation to just sending that to a donor. And that donor will know that just since their corporation exists and this is the official policy, it's more than enough excuse for 95%+ of individuals and even small corporations to go ahead and write that check and know that you'll back it up later with the IRS letter, which can take 10 weeks, 12 weeks for a smaller nonprofit, and 4 to 6 months for a full-blown nonprofit, even a larger nonprofit, even with our lightning-fast process, our sort of love letter to a bureaucrat, as we call it. But the IRS average is over a year. So if we can cut off 6 or 9 months of that people really appreciate that. But they don't have to wait to get started. And we give them every tool. We flatten out every speed bump outside of the filing process for the founder, because what we're out for is to change history by helping tens of thousands of people start nonprofits and become successful, not just not know what to do with it after that.
Well, it sounds like you offer something similar to what I do in terms of I help business owners and family business leaders to scale their companies. And there are different stages of growth in a business's life cycle. And I see you talk about the five stages of a nonprofit. So what are these five stages, if you can share with us and help us understand, you know, what that looks like? And maybe, just explain what it is, if you would.
Absolutely. So the five stages of a nonprofit are seed. That's kind of the idea that you bring. It's that germinating desire inside of you. That's the one thing we can't do. Then you move into startup, where you put some form around it. You get the entity together, file it, and start looking at getting the tax exempt status and all of the other little ancillary things that are required, all of which we provide. Stage three is to systemize, because you want to start early enough so that this thing doesn't become a burden instead of a blessing, right? And you want to put some basic systems in place to share information with volunteers and staff and just keep yourself organized. Then as you move on to stage four, which is scale, you want to start growing the nonprofit, propagating the message and the mission and getting the word out there about how to fundraise and putting those avenues in place. And finally, in order to avoid founder syndrome, which as you can tell, we've tried to avoid from the beginning, in stage five, that's sustainable. And that's where you want to create a legacy by raising up leaders inside the organization so that you can enjoy your life and not build yourself something that really starts from a very good place, but can become a very burdensome place. And you know that in succession planning. Many businesses that you've worked with, I'm sure, painted themselves in a corner because they didn't realize how important it was to raise up leadership that would be true to that family business's mission, but also not rely on somebody who wants to spend time with the grandkids to be there after dinner on weekends anymore.
I think this is all really interesting. And what are some questions that listeners might be wanting to know the answer to that I haven't asked you?
Well, where to go to find out information? Can they talk to someone? Many people have an idea and they've been like, I've been wanting to do this for a while, but I don't know the things I need to do before I start the nonprofit. So I just talked about some things that you need to do in that nonprofit formation process and after. But we have a great gift for any listeners that you have, where we'll provide a boot camp, and it covers all of the things in 10 really easy steps, 10 lessons on what they need to do to prepare to pull the trigger, because they want to have that mission statement. They want to have that name that's going to last and not feel like they wish they thought about that further 6 months from now, et cetera. So that those kinds of issues are the questions that I've done thousands. I've probably done 5,000 to 10,000 strategy calls over the past 8-9 years in this business. And I've boiled them down to something that is really easily apprehended and understood by anyone who's thinking about a nonprofit.
So can they find this at your website, instantnonprofit.com?
Yes, they can actually go to instantnonprofit.com/disruptive-successor and get a disruptive-successor and get this bootcamp for free, because we've set that up so that your listeners don't have to remember something really complicated to go get that.
Oh, Christian, this is just fantastic. So Instant Nonprofit, launch your movement, make a living by starting a tax-exempt 501c3 without the headache, delays, or legal fees. Sounds like this is a really simple business model, almost like a legal Zoom or something similar. You must have quite a bit of competition in this marketplace. So, like, who are the competitors, or, you know, how do you stand out and differentiate yourself from the competition and from lawyers in this market?
Yeah, I love that question, because yes, there are people there are organizations, companies who purport to do what we do, but I've taken a deep look, and whenever I have someone coming from another company, and I never downplay or insult any other company, because everybody's doing their best, I believe. However, companies that you and I could think of the names of really haven't innovated on this process. If they do everything for everyone, then it's a very small part of their revenues. And when I have somebody coming over who gave up on their process and got refunded, and then they find us, and this happens all the time, whether it's attorneys or another service provider, I'll ask them to go into their process and even, you know, screenshot it and show me. And I continue to see that no one is taking care of what I believe are the best people in the world, the nonprofit founder, right? They're kind of raising their hand accidentally and saying, I'm actually a good person. I might need a little bit of help here, a little bit skilling up, et cetera. And so we will take a look and we know what's out there. And what we've done is just make this so much easier from that bureaucratic perspective that I don't really believe in competition. I mean, there's enough certainly for everyone, but we do want to be the dominant player, because if you've read Blue Ocean Strategy or any of those business strategy books, we are anticipating where people ultimately want to go and are bringing them there. This is not about selling a package. Yes, you need those filings done. And yes, you need a couple of other things that we could provide to you. But you don't need any obstacles to be put in front of you. You need them all mowed down. And then you need to help people constantly regain their own vision and revisit their own reason that they got into this, and help them with all the little ancillary things, which is why we add a lot of things to our process that aren't related to just the filings. And we give them hope. We teach on Joseph Campbell's hero's journey model, for example. So they can fit themselves into that and they go, oh, this is actually something that's kind of universal. Then we show them how the donor is in their own hero's journey process. And so all of these kind of frameworks really help people go from just this being a rote, predictable or staid process where you just have to check a bunch of boxes, to constantly revisiting the ideas that will keep them moving forward on the path and giving them the care and attention that they deserve. And really, sometimes people just need permission to go ahead and take the next step. And we do that as well.
Christian Lefebvre, you are a very helpful person. I am sure that you must be great at offering up these strategy sessions for people. This has been really helpful to me to listen. It's been inspiring. You're a fellow biker, yogi, snowboarder, and passionate about personal transformation and changing the world and making it easy for people to create a legacy based on their passion. I think it's really hard for some people to figure out what is that passion that they want to leave a legacy behind for, other than their kids and their family. And it sounds like you offer a pretty extensive buffet, if you will, helping them to figure out what that looks like. And so I really appreciate you being on the show today. And I want to remind people that you can go to instantnonprofit.com/disruptive-successor and get access to Christian's bootcamp. And then you can find and learn more about his service at instantnonprofit.com. Christian, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much. It's been great. Look forward to talking with you again soon.
Also, we will have also links to Christian's social contacts in the notes at the bottom of the page. So thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this show, tell friends about it. If you want to start a nonprofit, reach out to Christian. If you like this show, give us a rating of 5-star or more on your listening podcast of choice. And thank you for being a loyal listener.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, the Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful, so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at the goldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Thank you for joining us on the Disruptive Successor podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, review, and share with a friend who would benefit from the message. If you're interested in picking up a copy of my book, Disruptive Successor, go to disruptivesuccessor.com.